Thanks for listening today, guys. This is the South Loop Strength and Conditioning Podcast. I'm here with our Director of Training, Todd Neef, and Liz Yearly from the Chicago Recovery Room here in Chicago, Illinois. Liz, Todd, hello.
Hello.
Hey there.
Right on. So today, guys, what are we going to talk about? We have Liz here to discuss a few concepts in terms of recovery, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll go through some questions. We'll try to make this as clear as possible on some concepts that we'll discuss. But yeah, we'll just get this rolling and we'll see where it leads.
So Liz, before we kind of start diving into the recovery room stuff, we'll just kind of go typical background information, because for you, you have an excessive amount of letters after your name, which can make it impressive, but also somewhat confusing in terms of what you do and why you do it. So please explain and justify yourself to
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, guys. Totally. So my background is primarily as a physical therapist, but I did receive my athletic training degree while I was doing my undergraduate work at Marquette University. So I started out primarily in the physical therapy athletic training role, which mainly means I just niched myself in the sports medicine population. A few years into practice, I wanted to be able to essentially treat people autonomously. And so in the state of Illinois, you have to have a prescription from a doctor. So I went back and got my license for massage therapy. That essentially gave me the right to kind of touch people therapeutically for treatment without having to go through a physician first.
So you're basically gaming the system.
It's a little bit of a loophole. I like to call it a loophole, but yes.
But so you basically have all these different certifications that enable you to see people in a variety of different situations with a referral from a doctor, just walking in, paying cash, bill through insurance, et cetera. Is that
right?
Correct?
It basically opens up, and I think we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but I'm essentially able to see you for all bouts of care, acute, maintenance, rehab, whereas this day and age, as a physical therapist, it's really just that rehab acute setting. And so doing maintenance and wellness stuff gets a little bit trickier if you want your insurance to pay for it.
Sure. And so you also are the owner of the Chicago Recovery Room, which is inside of a physical therapy practice. And you guys have an ice bath. You guys have compression boots. You do massage therapy, all this kind of stuff. I think you originally started this for sort of the endurance athlete population, then found out that CrossFitters care a lot about this as well. Can you kind of just give us a breakdown of like why recover? Who cares?
Yeah, sure.
I don't care. Why should I care?
You should. You should use our services. Now, Todd does use our services. Recovery is, I mean, it's a hot topic these days, and I think they're learning that in previous kind of training programs, especially with runners, I mean, it was more about like taking a rest day. And so what we're doing is differentiating between rest and actual recovery. So you can actually do things that will help your body recover versus just giving it a break. And so, I mean, that can go in all types of directions in terms of kind of physiological things that you're doing for your muscles and, you know, actual, you know, inflammation and things like that. It can be mental recovery. It can be adrenal. I mean, this can go down a lot of pathways, nutrition. But so the recovery essentially is this open to the public training room that gives access to kind of the everyday athlete that's working out really hard, the ability to do the physiological stuff, you know, so the compression boots, you know, Normatec compression boots, which is like a pneumatic compression device, electrical stimulation, the hands-on kind of different massage therapy techniques, all of these things are designed to help kind of keep your body doing what it needs to do, recovering quicker, and basically remaining, I mean, our chief goal would be injury prevention. I mean, we're definitely there once you've kind of banged yourself up, but prevention and maintenance are kind of like an underserved population.
Liz, and you know, we just briefed on this real quick, but you know, you see a lot of endurance athletes, CrossFitters tend to be someone who comes in a lot. What other types of athletes, you know, what other types of people do you see regularly, and who would you like to see more of?
So those are definitely the top. I mean, that endurance athlete, CrossFit, triathlete fits in that endurance category. You know, now that the word's getting out, we're definitely seeing more of the team sports. So we have guys who are like going to a combine and are coming in during their heavy training week, or high school kids that got scholarships to college and they're hitting it hard this summer have been coming in and doing recovery so that they're ready to go for the start of their season. So they're going to be introduced to these kind of recovery rooms and facilities at their colleges, and so I think it's kind of neat that they're learning kind of best practices and good recovery options before they get there. We're really available to see. It doesn't even have to always be an athlete. We do offer some basic, you know, massage therapy services. You know, I'll use the word chronic pain, you know, with some caution, but definitely chronic pain or people who just, you know, desk jobs, right? We have 9-to-5ers who sit on desk jobs and they get, you know, things get tight and then they try to go and do these activities. So I don't want to zero out like the it can still be the everyday man. It's not like super duper intense. We can definitely accommodate that athlete as well.
You know, and I think that's pretty common. You know, Todd and myself here at South Loop Strength and Conditioning, we see a lot of different types of people, right? You have your people that want to take this a little bit more seriously. You have the people that are here for general health, wellness, fitness, and you have that population that just want to look good naked, right? But this all kind of comes into play when we talk about recovery, sleep, nutrition, all of these things coming together. And I think that's a very big thing, you know, for both of our industries combined. Again, guys, this is the South Loop Strength and Conditioning Podcast. I'm Paul Wagner. I'm here with Todd Neef and Liz Yearly of the Chicago Recovery Room here in Chicago, Illinois. Guys, let's jump down the hole a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about recovery and what we're talking about here.
Yeah, so you kind of mentioned all these different modalities, right? We have ice baths, we have this compression, we have soft tissue stuff. I mean, from my understanding of it, it's a little bit of a black box in terms of what's actually going on. But why would you do this? What is the goal? Is there do you have a conception of a mechanism? Is it nervous system mediated? Are we moving lymph around? What are we doing and why do we care?
I wish I could answer that with a very simple answer, but the research is, you know, kind of all in a black box. It's kind of all over the place. So, you know, to speak about kind of our most popular things, like the compression boots, which are these kind of large pneumatic compression devices, they've been around since the 60s in kind of a static fashion post-surgical. You know, we know that they are helping essentially kind of the lymphatic and the kind of vascular system move things. We don't know exactly what it's moving. We don't know what's causing the soreness, but we do know that people essentially have a perception of feeling better once they've used them. There's some research that shows there is some metabolite mobilization, some differences in CK levels and lactate, and then there's some that say no, that absolutely doesn't happen. So, you know, I think perception's big. I think if you feel like you're being active in your recovery, that's helpful. As far as ice, there's a huge debate in the world of icing right now, especially among CrossFitters, actually, who follow, you know, Kelly Stard and those guys. You know, the ice bath is the same type of thing. We definitely know ice can decrease inflammation, but the argument is, do we want to decrease your body's natural inflammatory process? And same thing, I think it's what works for you and what you find seems to be the most helpful. I think the combination of compression and ice gives people the biggest bang for their buck from what I've seen and what they like. There's definitely people who prefer Epsom salt instead of cold.
Yeah, I like an Epsom salt bath.
Compression garments, you know, massage, more of a lymphatic type massage. So, you know, we kind of have it all covered and we believe that, you know, all of it is valid, but, you know, we can't back it all up at this time. There's, you know, the jury's kind of still out on a lot of this stuff.
Sure. And then how do you make a decision in terms of, you know, we run into the same thing with strength and conditioning where the research is, it's there in some capacity, but you can't make sort of day-to-day decisions based upon it. It's not for the right population necessarily. You have these studies measuring proxy markers rather than actual, you know, performance decreases or increases. And so a lot of it ends up being sort of more this blend of clinical experience, research, things you've read, things that you want to try. How do you kind of decide and parse that out in terms of what you want to do? If you're treating someone or recommending a recovery protocol or...
Absolutely. I mean, there's standards, there's evidence-based that we follow in terms of general guidelines of phases of healing. There's physiological things that are happening, you know, a day after a sprain, a week after a sprain. So, I mean, what we do at the recovery room is we can differentiate what's actually going on. Is it muscular? Is it ligamentous? Is it, you know, adrenal? I mean, we feel like you got to know what you're looking for and kind of what you're treating to pick the right recovery modality. So being a resource for that, I think, is one thing that we do well. But otherwise, it is. I mean, I think rehab, training, all of that, I think that there's an art and there's a science. And so it's a lot of experience. It's what I've heard from people, what they, you know, the feedback that I receive from people, what they say makes them feel better. And so we try to offer the gamut, but definitely help guide people to make, you know, better decisions for where they're at in their training, in their healing, in their particular injury.
Sure. So let's say that, for example, I may be coming in without any sort of specific injury or issue. And I'm like, hey, listen, I care about my performance a lot, and I tend to wreck myself in the gym up to 5 days per week. What should I do about that?
So our general kind of recovery process, if it's a little bit more, you know, if I don't know a lot about them, we definitely do a little bit of a history, kind of find out about their training habits, fix those things first. I mean, that's ultimately, you know, they need to be on the right training program. But, you know, we would recommend playing around with how you feel doing the recovery before and after, especially massage. So a lot of people have harder days or like cumulative days. So they'll come in after kind of their longer runs or their at towards the end of the week and do kind of one day that's dedicated towards their recovery. We have other people who just, you know, if they lift a barbell, they're coming in recovering because they just want to feel better. So it's a little bit learning about how your body responds. There's some people who do not want to massage before a heavy lifting day because that just makes them, you know, feel less than what they want to feel. So, you know, the general thing is it's, you got to play with it a little bit, but I would say that you can definitely couple it with harder intensity end of the week type of things as a general rule is what we see.
Sure. And then sort of related to that, I think a lot of people, at least kind of in the CrossFit world, have some vague nebulous notions of recovery that kind of like float around in their head with like soreness and lactic acid and all this type of stuff, and it's kind of like they're like, yeah, you know, soreness and lactic acid, and I just really need to, I need to get that handled, right?
You need like, to flush the system.
Yeah, first. Right. So can you maybe offer like a, I mean, it's a black box, but maybe a better framework for people to think about what's actually going on when they train and when they recover?
Sure. I mean, essentially, when you train, you're breaking down muscle, right? So we know that that's going to cause kind of an inflammatory response. And so that's kind of where the debate is on where you sit on the inflammatory argument. But if you're causing inflammation, that's going to essentially, we believe that that's what causes the soreness. This kind of DOMS, or delayed onset muscle soreness, being caused by lactic acid is really not supported in the literature. So we're trying to figure out what causes that delayed onset muscle soreness. And we think it's kind of the breaking down of muscle fiber, the inflammatory process that follows. So, you know, if that's what's happening, if you can, the way I look at it is if we can kind of stop your muscles from being inflamed for lengthy periods of time, then you're going to wake up feeling better the next day. And you can talk to most people, if you ice something, it generally feels better. If for anything at all, you get an analgesic effect. It's going to numb the system, which, you know, if we look at what's called the gait theory of pain, spasm, and relaxation, that alone can help you feel better. So, you know, that's kind of, if that's sort of what you were getting at. Physiologically, so, I mean, that's what we're
so
we're
you're
doing.
Telling me I'm not a pussy if I ice something?
You are definitely not. Now, there's other people who hate ice and claim that it's,
sure.
you know, whatever. But no, I mean, yeah. Getting in the ice bath, though, we see a lot of, I won't use the word, but it's hard to sit in an ice plunge. I mean, it takes
It is definitely pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
But very beneficial.
So would there be a difference then to kind of go into that inflammatory rabbit hole, right? Because, I mean, I've at least seen some research relative to post-workout antioxidant supplementation. It's pretty negative, right? That the high-dose antioxidants, I think, were recommended because they reduce cortisol post-workout. And then when you actually look at performance markers, it's like, whoa, you don't want to do that because that provokes the system to adapt. And if you just dump a whole bunch of antioxidants in there, it stops the adaptation. Right, so I don't know I haven't really looked into the ice thing too much. Is there a similar chance of that happening? Is it a different process? What's the deal there?
I think we're talking a little bit different systems, but the general same concept, right? Some people think that soreness that you feel, right, like pain and soreness is an indicator for your body. It's designed to do that to help you. But if you're so sore that you can't perform the next day at a level, whether it's perceived or not, then having the perception of feeling less sore the next day so you can get back at it, you know, would be advantageous for you in terms of icing.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't do the ice. They do the compression because we know that that just feels good, right? That's going to flush, let's put that in air quotes, you know, the system, the lymphatic system, cardiovascular system, you know, we know that kind of massage, soft tissue work, we're replicating that kind of idea of what's called a retro massage. We're flushing things toward the lymphatic, the groin, the armpits, towards the center of your body so that it can kind of process it and take it away. And that's kind of the theory that we're running on. But, you know, not to be repetitive, it's definitely, you got to find what works for you. And it may be, maybe you need a break or actual rest day in the middle of the week instead of on a Friday, you know, so you got to learn kind of how your body recovers, and or maybe you change, you know, your snatch day from your deadlift day, or you work with your coach on those things.
Sure.
Would there be any difference between like icing something versus contrast therapy?
Yeah, contrast.
Because I mean, I, at least in two, like just kind of listening to you talk, it seems like that may offer a balance between the two.
It can, yeah.
It may.
Yeah, I guess a part I failed to mention on icing is that it causes a vasoconstriction, right? So if you vasoconstrict something, then when it heats up or it it becomes not cold again, it vasodilates. And so everything about recovery is active recovery. So we're sure. we're replicating the body's natural pumping system. Your muscles have a pumping system. So let's actually define active recovery. Active recovery is, there's a lot of people out there who say, if you're super sore, let's say you ran a marathon. Most people on Monday take the day off of work, and then they might lay on the couch all day. Probably the worst thing you can do for you. Whether you have access to a recovery room or not, you should go for a walk, get on a bike. You want to do something at a very low level that's going to use those same muscles to activate your body's natural muscle pumping mechanism. So that's kind of a whole nother. If we take out the inflammatory kind of argument and we just look at the pumping mechanism of the body, that's what active recovery is about. So the sequential pulsing of the Normatec boots mimics kind of active recovery and muscle pumping. Contrast bath is exactly that. Hot, cold, hot, cold. Vasodilate, vasoconstrict, vasodilate. Pumping action. Ice, same thing. It's a little bit of a prolonged vasoconstriction, might help with inflammation, but then you get this huge vasodilation when you get out of there. And they think that actually might be responsible for a lot of it. So those are some of the different mechanisms too that kind of come into play, and probably what make it so hard to come up with an empirical study that looks at all of this stuff.
Sure. What about active recovery in terms of doing like an active recovery training session?
Totally.
Right? Like a, you know, easy spin on an Airdyne or like some low-level skill work. How would you balance trying to prescribe active recovery sessions like that with total volume in a training session? How do you know it's too much? How do you know it's too little? Where's the line there between when do you want to rest and when do you want to get in and move around?
Yeah, I think listening to your body, I know that, you know, people need help with that, but I don't know if I have a great answer. But
astonishingly,
it's listening to your body. I think, doing light bar work or just sitting, you know, doing an Airdyne, I think that is definitely good to throw in. Even maybe you do that as a warm-up, right? Like incorporate it in before a hard workout, but you're going to feel better if you kind of do maybe a 10 or 15 minute Airdyne workout and then hit it hard again. Because what we're doing is you're waking things up, right? You're bringing some blood into the system. You're telling it it's getting ready to go. So almost like active recovery could be like a pre-recovery, and then more of the kind of physiological things that we do and the modalities could be more of that kind of post stuff. End of the week, or just really like you, everyone knows that session where they're done, like they're on the ground, they've given it, and they're gonna feel it the next day. Those are the times where you can add in some of this kind of more, you know, state of the art, let's call it, modality kind of recovery tools.
Sure. And do you use any actual like physiological metrics or tests or assessments or anything like that to measure stuff? I mean, like HRV is out there, heart rate variability. You know, people will use like a vertical leap test to measure CNS recovery. Do you find that valuable or validity in any of those measurements?
There's a research article I just read actually that did show some improvements after cold ice bath, particular, just seemed to be the one they checked. They had people rest, they had people do the active recovery, and then they had people do ice. And the active recovery and the ice showed the same result in terms of, what did they look at for their power? They did a power test afterwards. They did a perceived scale, like an exertion scale afterwards, and it's failing me, but one other thing. And they did show that there was no change or improvement with rest, but their power and their perceived perception of recovery was improved post ice and post active recovery to the same extent.
Like ice bath?
Ice bath.
Was this with the hockey team?
It was cyclists.
Okay.
It was cyclists.
Gotcha.
They had them do like heavy bouts of bike sprints.
For sure.
So that's just one article that kind of pops into my head. But I mean, yeah, then there's other articles where they looked at CK, right? So, and they did show that the Normatec compression boots helped flood or, you know, decrease that level of CK.
What is CK?
What is CK for us? For us that don't have a lot of letters behind our name.
Creatine kinase, I believe. And so it's like a protein clearing. And so it's going to be an indicator of how quickly your body is kind of clearing metabolites from your system.
Okay.
Todd's got such more knowledge in this area than me, so he could probably spin it even differently. But that's the issue, right? We haven't defined.
It's a blood marker that can be used to measure muscle damage.
Essentially, which is protein breakdown means you're causing increased muscle damage. So yes. In that particular study, it did show that we were kind of the compression garments, actually, not the Normatec ones, the recovery garments, mm-hmm. were causing an improvement in that flushing. Okay. So, I mean, but then there'll be probably like three articles that show the opposite. So, I mean, it's, you know, you got to pick and choose your research and what you're looking at. The biomarkers are important for sure and kind of hard to, a lot of people aren't going to, it's a little bit more invasive to test some of this stuff.
So, Liz, you know, here at the gym, we see a lot of people that come in, specifically our population of new members that haven't really either been training for any extended period of time recently or have never really been in some type of consistent training program. And we talk a lot about this concept of kind of mobility work in terms of a preventative measure for whether it be injury, bad position because of injury, or injury because of bad position, and then this idea of rehab, right, or working after a workout to recover. So, you know, let's dive into this, because I'm from the field of my shoulder hurts. I for sure have torn my labrum. I need to call Liz immediately and get it diagnosed and get it fixed. So can you kind of give us an idea of the differences between the rehab and then the kind of preventative maintenance or care side of things that you guys do at the recovery room, and then just what someone like myself might be able to do on their own inside of a gym facility?
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you brought that up, actually. This mobility, you know, buzzword is super big, especially in CrossFit world. You have to get a diagnosis. That's the first thing. So you have to have a healthcare practitioner that either you trust and has fairly good diagnostic skills.
So this is not WebMD.
It's not no. WebMD. Okay. It's, you know, it's...
What
it's,
about bodybuilding.com/forums? .php?
No. Yeah, you got to have somebody. I mean, I think that kind of hyper-awareness to your body happens a lot with intense athletes, and they're really worried about what's going to happen the next day if they don't immediately get this assessed. So getting it assessed alone provides a ton of recovery, right? Like, if you come in, Paul, and you think you've torn your labrum every time I see you, and I'm like, nope, we're still good. I think your labrum's intact, you know? That's going to give you some peace of mind, and then we're going to talk about what we can do so you stop having these little twinges, right?
Right.
And the twinges are overuse, so that's generally soft tissue based, which is muscle, tendon, and nerves, right? So the nerve entrapments are kind of a big thing that I think are under appreciated and undertreated kind of in our world. And so in terms of, you know, rehab, when we think of rehab physical therapy, that means you've had an injury, you've been sent to the doctor, and you're going to come and get fixed from that injury.
Sure.
The recovery we're offering is maintenance, right? We know you're kind of putting your body at this risk for overtraining or maybe an acute injury or whatever. So if we can do anything to help decrease acute injuries in particular, but these chronic overuse injuries as well, we want to do that. So we look at different functional movements, similar to what you guys do when a new member comes in. You run them through an FMS. We have our own kind of functional system that we'll look through. We'll watch you squat, or we look at different special tests that are, you know, proven validity.
Sure.
If this test, you know, there's kind of clinical prediction rules. If you test positive for 4 out of 6 of these, then it's highly suspicious you have X, Y, or Z.
Sure.
That's where we are medical providers that have that training that can kind of differential diagnose what's going on.
And I found that, you know, recently, especially with my work with you and Keelan, who's also over at the recovery room, this idea of preventative maintenance and care has come into play, where I come in thinking I've done something horrible to myself, and then we find that it's actually some type of asymmetry, some type of imbalance, or just a general lack of being able to do the correct movement because of a motor control issue or some other type of thing. And I wind up leaving with that, you know, state of mind that everything's good. You know, we're not dealing with a major injury, but you wind up helping me find what's causing this problem that I came in with it. And it's usually, okay, now we need to do some preventative maintenance, some exercises that will get me to that spot. So, give me an idea of, like, is that a normal thing? Is that something you see more with certain types of athletes? Give me an idea of that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I think that just to touch on the kind of motor control piece, because I haven't talked much about kind of the services of therapeutic exercise that we offer.
Sure.
You know, a lot of times people kind of mobilize, stretch, and it's not really an issue of mobility or flexibility at all.
Right.
It's an issue of stability. And so it's really hard to tell a guy who can squat, you know, 400 pounds that they have weak gluteus medius, which is a major stabilizing muscle, or they don't know how to turn on certain core muscles that need to kind of fire in a sequential order to help stabilize your power or your big muscle movers.
Right.
So we talk a lot about that. I think what we do well is education. Like, you have to get that high level athlete to understand that, like, I realize you can lift heavy weights and you can run 20 miles, but when I test this, you have no concept of how to turn this muscle on, and that's an activation problem.
Sure.
Which can lead to an asymmetry or just an overuse. It's really your body has, like, a very systematic timing mechanism. Like, stabilizers have to turn on before power muscles turn on, or you're going to run into trouble.
Right.
So we definitely do a lot of that. We kind of, like, the person who's like, oh, every time mid-season I get the IT band, it's just normal, I need, you know, to do foam rolling. Well, no, you probably need to stabilize or turn on something that's inhibited, or kind of find that root cause that you're talking about. Sure. So we definitely do, we do a lot of that. But then kind of the mental frame, like going home with a diagnosis and knowing like, okay, I didn't totally injure myself, I don't need surgery, I just need to do a couple of these things on a regular basis. It gives you peace of mind, and I mean, peace of mind is everything. I mean, we know how this, like the central nervous system, where, I mean, you, if you get your mind worked up about an injury, then it's almost like, I think of it like when you have an itch and you can't itch it, all of a sudden that itch is worse, right? So now we've given you some information and you can kind of calm down your worries so that you're not constantly keeping that neural connection alive to that particular body part.
Definitely.
People do a lot of what's called checking too, not to drag this out, but checking is like they twist and contort their body into a certain position and say, every time I do that, I have pain. And it's like the most odd, obscure, non-functional position I've ever seen.
Right.
And they do it on repeat. And I'm like, stop doing that. You're it's like picking a scab, right? You're keeping it alive. You're checking it. You're like, oh, when I get up today, I'm going to feel this. When I do this, I'm going to feel it. And there's, I think there's a lot to be learned about that concept of just kind of fear in terms of perpetuating pain symptoms.
Sure. And we see a lot of new members come in, and the reason we use movement screening right off the bat is to really look at this difference of mobility, stability, and issues coming from either a lack of or too much of either one of those. You know, and it gets to a point where we do need to refer out to someone like you or any of the other people that work in your facility. But I think also there's this room for general maintenance and care that can be done by anyone. Can you give me an idea of maybe a couple things that you see on a regular basis that we would all benefit from?
Sure.
Just a very simple, basic level.
Yeah, I mean, I think getting acquainted with a foam roll or mobilization kind of tools are really important.
Sure.
It's kind of that concept of, you know, people always come in, they're like, I know I don't stretch enough, I know I don't do this enough. So kind of getting a routine, like a, you know, don't show up for class like 1 minute before like I do. Show
right,
up like
right.
10 or 15 minutes before and do some work to kind of ready your system. If you've seen somebody and let's say you know you suffer from some knee pain after tough squats, the program they gave you, it's not that it's like a lifelong program, but it sort of is. It needs to make an appearance in your maintenance routine kind of once to twice a week.
Definitely.
Not 5 to 6 times a week. So if you have shoulder stuff and then it gets better and then you stop doing the rehab, unfortunately, you may fall back into that pattern. Not always, if we've kind of found the total root cause, but a lot of times it's just the way you're built, the way you're put together. You need to do a little maintenance in terms of the stability or that therapy program that you've been.
I think I have a solid 30 minutes of work that you've given me for every day, each day of my training. You know, but like you said, the consistency of doing that stuff has made a big gap in terms of seeing you for what I think is an acute injury, or just being like, okay, no, this is something that I personally need to work on due to the way my mechanics work as a human being.
For sure. The accessory work that you guys throw in like Thursday, right? Some days are kind of more accessory days, I think is really important and a missing piece in kind of a lot of structured CrossFit in particular programs, and definitely runners. Runners like do not like to do anything but run. So
right.
Getting them to do any type level of kind of resistance strength training is hard, but it makes huge differences in their performance and their injury prevention.
Speaking of both runners and CrossFitters, in terms of trying to play kind of, you know, the long game in terms of development of them, I think a lot of folks, even, you know, at sort of a casual level of participation in either marathon running or they want to do a local CrossFit style throwdown or something like that, will push through pain in a way that to me seems insane, right? And I think there's an issue differentiating between this is a painful injury, overuse injury, acute injury that I need to avoid irritating versus like this is just like standard training discomfort. Do you have any thoughts on how to enable someone to differentiate those two who
sure.
maybe doesn't get it and can't tell the difference?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you definitely need to educate them on their first episode of this DOMS, right? This is delayed onset muscle soreness. But my general guidelines for any activity, I don't care if it's swinging a golf club, lifting a barbell, or running, is if you're doing something funky, like if I just sort of tweak this or don't totally extend this and it feels fine, you should not be doing that activity. So like with running, if you got some type of weird limp or if you short step and it feels better, you're inevitably gonna lead to some other type of injury. And then, I mean, this is a little hard because people's pain perceptions are different, but there's also some kind of a general guideline that if we are kind of greater than this 3 to 4 out of 10 on the pain scale, you're really getting into I'm talking acute, like pain levels, then it's probably something you shouldn't be working for, or if it's progressive, right? If as the workout continues, it gets progressively worse, you start to make more compensations, or throughout the week it gets progressively worse and things are not kind of recovering between sessions, those are all indicators that you probably should see somebody, or, you know, we need to maybe modify or change some things for a few weeks.
Sure. And then kind of related to that long game attitude, right? Particularly for more competitive people, if someone's like, hey, you know, listen, I want to go do an Ironman. Hey, listen, I want to try to compete at the CrossFit Games Regionals. At some level, by signing up for that, they're inherently going to make sacrifices in their health, right? Like, that's not a healthful activity to try to train at that level. But we still, again, want to try to play the long game and keep these people as healthy as possible, training with as much volume as possible relative to their capacity to recover without them blowing up. We know that they might trash their hormones a little bit. We know that they're going to be flirting with overuse injuries. How do we attempt to keep them as healthy as possible given the fact that the demands of their sport are going to mess them up?
Yeah, sure. I think, I mean, it has to start first with your coach. I mean, that sounds maybe obvious, but like the person developing your program needs to know what they're doing, and they need to be in communication with how you're feeling on a regular basis. So learning or having a coach, I think, tell you like, hey, you're kind of feeling a little fatigued this week, or not, you know, let's take it back a week. This is going to be better for you in the long run, I think is really important. And so having that relationship with the coach and trusting them is going to be really important. And then same thing, the program that's designed should have all the missing pieces, should have all the pieces. So it should have, you know, the strengthening, the running miles, but it needs to have whatever your goal is. It might need a sprint day, it might need a recovery day, it might need a strength day, a yoga day. So kind of once you've figured out what works for you, you have to know that like going hard every time is not really the most beneficial, and that sometimes a rest week even can be the best thing for you in the long game. We run into this towards the end of marathon training a lot. Really, once you've kind of hit that 16-mile mark, you almost never need to run more than that, and you're going to successfully be able to complete that marathon. And people get really caught up on this 20-mile run and doing two of them before they run, you know. And so somebody who's suffering from something that could lead to a more serious injury will say, hey, you've done the training. You got 3 weeks to go. Let's do some cross training. You're going to be fine.
Sure.
Your legs and your lungs are going to be fine. We're just going to change up the mode, the system that we're using in your training the last few weeks.
How do you get buy-in with that? Because I know that I work with a lot of competitive fitness athletes, right? They want to compete in CrossFit, they want to compete in grid, and they're some of the most maniacal type A self-flagellating people of all time in terms of never missing a training session, never skipping a rep, trying to do extra work. And they think that if they take 2 days off that they're going to lose every adaptation they've achieved over 5 years of training.
Right.
Right. What's the research behind it? Like, can you point to, hey, look at this study, like you can take 3 weeks off and you're fine. Like, is there something like that?
Not that I'm aware of, but it's something I'm super interested in. And so I think that's kind of the art of what we do, right? As coaches, trainers, therapists, is you have to build that relationship and that trust with your athlete, your patient, or whatever. And I think that what we do well in the recovery room is we listen. And we hear your goals, and then we know how to kind of say in an authoritative way, this is not a smart thing for you to do.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you not to, but if
right.
you say, this is just not smart, and you're going to be feel much better if you listen to me, I'm a professional and I've done this, just trust me. And sometimes you got to pull the trust card, you got to know who your person is, you know. Or sometimes you bargain, be like, all right, fine, you want to do whatever, let's do 20, you want to do 20 miles, let's do 10 on whatever, some weightless treadmill and 10 outside. I mean, you gotta know who your audience is and then see what works for them. But I think having kind of just a really, you know, intimate one-on-one discussion with them, it goes a long way. And I think a lot of practitioners do not do that. They just get frustrated and they're like, well, you know. And so I think I'm super interested in the psychology of this stuff. I've been looking into, you know, various kind of dynamic therapy, like talk therapy, sports psychology type of interventions for chronic pain. Also has a chronic, like, athletic injury category, right? Like that injury that athlete that's chronically injured but doesn't actually have an injury fits in chronic pain category to me. So,
right.
But hasn't been researched in the same way as some sort of like chronic pain in the fibromyalgia or low back type of way. But I think it can be handled with the same type of kind of psychosomatic discussion about how the body and the mind work together.
Right. Well, and I think it's an interesting thing to look at when you look at athletes or competitive, let's call them part-time athletes, and their inability to look at the macro view of everything,
mm-hmm.
right? And we talk about this a lot in the gym of, hey, look, if you have to take a day off or you have to take a week off, you've got to look at the macro view to make it better for yourself and realize that that is a very small chunk out of the bigger picture here. And I think that maybe more so in that endurance world of things, it's a little bit more difficult, right? That this idea of like volume, 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 and building that volume leading up to an event or leading up to a race can kind of compound. But, you know, I think too with the recovery stuff is being able to look at recovery or preventative maintenance or even rehab from that macro view becomes very important for these athletes in moving forward in that making the connection between the two of training, recovering, and then preventing injuries down the road. So that's definitely a tough thing to do, to get into someone's head and be like, look, it's okay.
Totally.
Take a step back, take a day off, chill out, you're good to go.
You can sometimes call their bluff, and like Todd's great at this, right? Like he has these kind of one-on-one, like I call him like life coach meetings, and I don't even think he realizes he's good at it.
Definitely.
But
it's a skill.
He can call you, right? Like if he can call some symptoms, like how's your sleep? Oh, how's your fatigue? What's the color of your urine? Like,
right.
How's your this, you know, how's your sex drive? I mean, those are relevant. So if you can kind of call people or make kind of predict things they may be experiencing that they haven't told you, they're going to be like, oh boy, she kind of knows what's going on, or, you know, we're, you, so sometimes it's that, right? It's kind of being able to have seen it enough times to predict what's going to come. And then when you bring it up, they're kind of like, oh, well, yeah, I'm already kind of experiencing that. And then they're going to be like, okay, I need to cool off.
Right.
So, but it's, you know, it's presenting all of that in a tactful manner. And I think that that's just building rapport and trusting kind of who you're working with and what you're doing.
So for you, you've at least within the Chicago area, pretty much differentiated yourself as a therapist, right? A lot of athletes come specifically to you to work with you because you have this understanding of these types of things. What do you do for continuing education? What do you do? What do you read? What do you listen to? How do you learn?
It's all over. Definitely in the beginning, I did kind of the basic, like there's physical therapy courses that are just basics, right? Like you got to take when the foot hits the ground. I mean, if you're in the field, you just take these certain kind of Gary Gray or Cook, like these certain well-known researchers in the industry. And so I definitely started off with a very functional look on things. So exercise-based, triplanar type of activities. And then you get bored, at least I do, I get bored super easily. And then I hate when I'm doing the same thing over and over. And so I just look, I follow a lot of people in the industry. I follow their blogs. I see what courses they're going to.
Like what?
Lately?
Like what?
Yeah, I didn't know if you want specifics. Yeah, for sure.
I know you go to courses. I don't care. Tell me which ones.
Tell me which ones. Well, I have a very big background in soft tissue. So active release technique has been kind of a game changer in terms of kind of soft tissue mobilization. It just kind of gives you a thorough look of kind of every muscle in the body, how the nerves and the muscles interact with each other, and kind of the movement pattern of it. So active release, or ART as it's known, is a huge kind of thing that shows up in my practice.
Yep.
Nerve, I've done a lot of kind of neuro. There's a, you're gonna call me on the course. There's a, his name is Adrian Lowe, and he's huge in kind of the neurosciences. So kind of this chronic pain, neuropathic type of, pain response is huge. So learning to work with the nervous system is a missing, I'd say that's the number one missing piece. Where I'm lacking and what I'm looking to add in now is kind of more the osteo. So people will relate to it if I say the word chiropractic, but manipulation, kind of looking at bony structure versus just soft tissue. So that, there's Maitland courses, there's kind of St. Augustine course, you know, a lot of it's just through various kind of reputable universities. So I'm looking into getting going on some of those. And that depends what you want to specialize in too. I mean, if you do with orthotics or feet, you know, when the foot hits the ground is huge. There's some Richard Jackson courses that are great on like the SI and those types of like low back SI interplay. And then, as I mentioned, I'm super into this psycho stuff. So I read a lot on
Hitchcock.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yes.
I read a lot on kind of the pain science and kind of the psychology behind patient rapport and empathy and just kind of, you know, the skill of listening, I think is really big. So that I do more on my own, kind of side stuff, buy books, those types of things. But I've listened to Mobility Wads and, you know, we've done, I have a million books that I kind of start and then get bored with and then skip to the end chapter. And so it's all over the place.
So the common theme seems to be that this idea of continuing education is exactly that, continuing.
Yeah.
And it ever evolving, especially as I think a lot of the sports or athletes that you deal with evolve over time, sure. that your practice has to evolve. And the way you approach injury, the way you approach personal to personal or personal relationships within your facility, it is continuing to move forward and it's ever growing,
Which
is huge in both industries.
Yeah, I mean, the way I practiced 10 years ago and now is probably a lot different, but on a spectrum. So there's basically a spectrum of education, and I think you kind of rebuild and define yourself every year and every course and every time you learn something. So yeah, I'm really big. I mean, people just tell me that I'm always bored, and I don't know if it's boredom or what it is, but
sure.
You know, it's interest for sure.
Yeah. Adult ADD.
You're a professional. That's what you are.
I'm a professional.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up, guys. Liz, where can they find you? Tell us about the Chicago Recovery Room. Where can they go to get a hold of you or schedule appointments? What do they need to do?
Sure. So we are in the South Loop, Chicago, Illinois. We are basically right up from Lakeshore Drive on Roosevelt. Or I'm sorry, 15th and Michigan, up from Roosevelt.
It's 1509 South Michigan Avenue.
Got it.
In the South Loop.
You can, the best thing to do is probably go to our website and sign up for our newsletter.
Okay. What is that website?
It is ChicagoRecoveryRoom.com.
Okay.
You can also find my email there, my contact, my phone number. We are very good on email, so definitely Liz@ChicagoRecoveryRoom. You can email me there, info@ChicagoRecoveryRoom. But the website's your best bet. Follow us on kind of Facebook, which is Chicago Recovery Room, the full thing.
Fan page.
Twitter and Instagram are just Shy Recovery Room, but we do a lot of updates and things on those kind of social media outlets as well.
Very good. Very good. Todd, any closing statements, questions, thoughts for Liz or any of the listeners?
I think I hounded her pretty solidly for the last 30 to 40 minutes.
Very good.
I feel good about it.
Very good. Well, guys, thanks for listening. This is the second episode of the South Loop Strength and Conditioning Podcast. Go ahead and check us out online at SouthLoopSC.com. Sign up for our newsletter, email list. Check out all the free content we have on there. Check us out on Facebook. Worst case scenario, show up at our door. Come in, train, ask questions, learn a little bit. Thanks, guys.